or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of March 15th, 2015. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and we are thrilled to have you with us. You know, I normally begin these things with the week in 60, but to be brutally honest, I spent most of this week at a conference, Enterprise Connect, down in Orlando, Florida. And while it was a wonderful event where I learned a lot, and you can share what I learned if you read my pieces here at Information Week, I wouldn't know where to start to wrap up this week in 60 seconds. What I will do, though, before we get deeply into the show, is remind everyone that this is the weekly audio portion of Information Week, and one of our sister events is Interop Las Vegas. Interop Las Vegas Connecting the IT Community will take place from April 27th through May 1st, 2015, from the lovely Mandalay Bay Convention Center in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, we would love to have you there with us, and you can find out all you need to know about Interop Las Vegas by going to www.interop.com. Hey, we look forward to seeing you there. Well, let's dive right into it now. To begin this week's show, we have with us Sue Fogarty, the editor-in-chief over at Information Week sister publication, Network Computing. Sue, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you, Kurt. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I was spending most of my time this week talking about networks, but talking about them fairly high up on the stack. And I know that network computing tends to live down in the nitty-gritty of the network. So was much going on down in that network nitty-gritty this week?
Well, you know, we do talk about the nitty-gritty, but we have been covering more and more on the software level, as you know, because a lot of the time when I come here and talk to you, I'm talking about software-defined networking, and that's actually what I was going to tell you about this week once again. We had several articles on software-defined networking and network automation, actually. We're starting to talk about more, and we had a good piece this week from one of our contributors, Tom Hollingsworth, and he's a former network engineer who worked for an IT services company for a number of years that specialized in primary education. So he has kind of a different view on IT, is more focused on how to implement on a more of a bare bones kind of level, not spending a ton of money, and has a really good realistic viewpoint on doing things in a practical way. And he wrote about how SDN can actually benefit small and medium enterprises from his standpoint. And that's kind of a different spin on it, because when we write about SDN, we're usually looking at it from the context of a large enterprise. We're talking about, you know, financial services firms or Google or Facebook or, you know, the really big companies. And he looked at it from the standpoint that SDN is becoming more accessible for smaller businesses, and that it can be really useful because it reduces the amount of maintenance and troubleshooting that needs to be done on the network and the amount of expertise that the IT staff needs to have. And the way it's being packaged is now becoming much more consumable. It can be implemented in software, and you can try it on a trial basis, see if you like it, you know, and just pay for it for a short time. If it doesn't work, you're not committed to it. And some companies are actually offering it free. They have starter kits that are very reasonable. So for education or an SMB, it is a good option, especially if you're in kind of a greenfield environment or you want to just do it in a new office, a remote office. We got a lot of great feedback on that article, and Tom is also one of our Interop speakers, and he'll be talking about case studies in education at Interop. And then kind of related to that, we have a short video that's up on the site from Jeremy Shulman, and it's about SDN and how it ties into network automation. And he's talking about how the DevOps movement grew and is kind of taking place now in networking, and how networking professionals are learning to apply DevOps practices to the network and put software tools into action and program the network. And he has a really good way that he puts it when he says that a lot of networking administrators and network engineers seem to be threatened by the thought of automation. But the way he views it, and he has a lot of experience, he worked at Juniper for 20 years, and he says that, you know, using this programming on the network and using tools to get things done faster and to make them more accurate and correct actually makes you much more valuable, because if you can, you know, use your knowledge to make the network work far better, then you make yourself much more valuable to the business because you make the network run so much better. So if you have any time, you should go check out that video. It's a great piece.
That's outstanding, and it sounds like what you're ultimately getting to is that SDN has a case to be made for both smaller businesses and large enterprises, but they're two separate cases. Is that where things tend to be settling out, or are we still too early in the whole SDN story for things to be settling out at all?
I think maybe it's too early to call. I think on the on the larger scheme, that it really does bring the same benefits across the board, but there are certain things that are appealing to a small business that maybe we weren't thinking about before, because for a smaller business, the agility and the speed and, you know, having extremely fast transactions may not be that important, but the maintenance value and, you know, having fewer people to work on your network is very important once it becomes something that you can implement easily and that's more consumable. But the quality of the technology is still an important thing, and it does need to be refined so that those businesses can consume it.
Well, among other things, you mentioned that one of your writers is going to be speaking at Interop. I know that there is a big SDN track at Interop, and I fully expect that to be filled with people trying to get a better grasp on what all of this means for their career and for their company.
Yes, we have a very good lineup of speakers talking about SDN at Interop. And there's a good range also of content, I think. We have two different speakers who are talking about case studies and the things that they're seeing in the market. They both work for IT services companies, so they're talking about, you know, their client installations and what people are using it for and how that's working out. And then we have a couple sessions that are pretty technical and about the nuts and bolts and how you understand the protocols and OpenFlow and how it works. And then we have a couple that are more high level about, how it's changing the industry and where it's all going. So we have kind of a mix of things for people who are approaching it at different levels or different places in their career.
Outstanding. And I know you continue to have that same kind of range there at Network Computing. Can you give us a glimpse at maybe some of what's going to be coming up for the next week over at Enterprise Computing? I'm sorry, Network Computing. Golly.
That's okay.
It has been a long, long week. I'm sorry.
I'm sure.
Network Computing.
Enterprise Connect plus Network Computing. Maybe we should spin up a new conference.
Good heavens,
or a new website.
I think the attorneys on the line are filing things right now.
No. So next week, we will be having a piece actually on SDN and security use cases, because we're seeing that a lot of businesses, or one of the most common reasons that enterprises actually adopt SDN, is to get heightened security. So our managing editor, Marcia Savage, is writing a feature about that, so we'll be publishing that. And we also have a very good piece on continuous delivery, which relates to DevOps and automation of the network, which I was just talking about, too, coming up on Monday. So keep your eyes peeled for that as well.
Outstanding. Well, I will be doing that, and I will also force myself to write networkcomputing.com in a notebook 100 times between now and Monday morning.
Oh, I don't think that's necessary, but...
I appreciate that. Well, Sue, we always appreciate you taking time out of a busy schedule to be with us here at Information Week Live, and we'll look forward to having you on again in the very near future.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Kurt.
But before I let you go, though, please remind our listeners where they can find you on social media in addition to over there at Network Computing.
I am Susan Fogarty on Twitter and on LinkedIn, and our Twitter handle for Network Computing is Network Computing without the G at the end.
Outstanding. Well, thanks so much, Sue. We'll see you again very soon.
Great. Thank you.
That was Sue Fogarty, Editor-in-Chief of, now get it right, Network Computing, a sister publication of Information Week. We're always pleased to have Sue be able to join us here at Information Week Live. Well, you know, we started talking about the Interop conference with Sue, and our next guest is going to be talking about things going on around Interop itself, and that is an interesting kind of thing. And so, with that, we bring it to Chris Murphy, editor here at Information Week. Chris, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hello. Great to hear from you. Great to be here.
Well, now, Chris, when we've been talking about Interop, and Interop is sort of the big tent for events going on that week in Las Vegas, but it's not really the only thing happening. And you're going to tell us about one of the things sort of happening in the same place at the same time, but not Interop. What's that all about?
That's the Information Week Conference. So the Information Week Conference is an event for IT leadership. So where, as you described it, Interop is thousands of people. This is a couple hundred people, all IT leaders talking about IT strategy. The theme of the conference is IT without borders. And the idea and the kind of theme running through it is that really IT has to be a part of every piece of a company and an organization these days, because nothing really moves forward without IT as part of it.
Okay, well, now, when you describe it like that, it brings up a number of questions. So let me just start running down the questions that I have. And the first of those is, when you use the phrase IT leaders, now, does that mean that everyone there is going to have CIO on their business card? Or are there a variety of titles that make up the group of people we call IT leaders?
Definitely a group. So there's a lot of CIOs. That's kind of the core of people who are there. There's VPs of IT. There's directors. There are people who might lead e-business efforts, head you know, VP of development, might be people who chart mobile strategy. So it's a pretty big tent that can include IT leaders these days.
Well, now with all of those IT leaders, what kind of topics do you talk to them about? I know that when I've gone to conferences for IT leadership over the past year or two, one of the big themes has been how IT leaders need to be business leaders. Is that one of the topics, or have we moved on from that?
I think that's a given, Kurt. I think you're right. I think that's fairly much a given. We won't spend a lot of time on, hey, you have to be a business leader. It's really amongst these crew, this crowd here, they have that seat at the table, and they're trying to figure out what to do with it. So, for example, one of the sessions we're going to have with Royal Caribbean CIO is discussing the customer-facing tech challenge. So on a cruise ship, Royal Caribbean cruise ship these days, technology is really a part of the new experience on a ship. People don't want to disconnect and just be on their cruise ship, so they have to provide them decent internet access right out in the middle of the sea. So that's an example where that's they're not worrying about, am I a business person? They're trying to figure out how to solve customer problems.
And I have a feeling that particular problem is not solved by either a big cable that connects the cruise ship to the port at Miami, or hooking up to the AT&T cell buoys out in the middle of the Caribbean.
Right. Well, buoys are an interesting notion, right? The notion of buoys or balloons that they're experimenting with over on Google. But that is satellites, actually. It's satellites, low Earth satellites. So a new generation of satellites that they're just a few of their ships are connected to at this point, but they're exploring that. They're using that for some of their ships. So that the internet access is better because it's a shorter trip to the satellite and back.
Outstanding. That's fascinating. I will actually look forward to sneaking in and hearing some of that presentation. And that starts to answer one of the other questions I have, and that is, when you have an audience of IT leaders, what kind of people do you bring in to talk to them? I mean, are these celebrities? Are they other IT leaders? What kind of people make up the speaker roster at an event like this?
More than anything, it is that peer learning environment. So it's other IT leaders and experts who are their peers. So, for example, we have Walmart CIO Karen Ann Terrell. We'll be talking about here's how somebody at the Fortune 1 company is looking at changing their IT organization and the role of IT. So, for example, this year in the Christmas season, their access to the website was much higher from mobile even than they expected. Not just, I mean, they understand that mobile's a huge part of our lives. They were fully expecting that, but even with that expectation, it was higher than they thought. So take that back and look at, well, what do we learn from that, and how do we change from that? So that kind of peer learning from other CIOs is the biggest piece. But we do have the occasional celebrity. So we do have, for example, we'll start our conference with Chris Anderson, the CEO of 3D Robotics, which is a drone company, makes drones, and he'll be talking about automation, the future of drones, and really challenging people right out of the gate to think, what's really changing about our landscape? And he'll kick us off. Chris Anderson's known for his work also as a former editor of Wired Magazine and author of books like The Long Tail, and the most recently one. Help me with the title on that one, Kurt.
It's Makers.
Right, thank you.
I'm in the middle of reading it right now. Fascinating book. Starts off talking about his grandfather, who actually patented an idea for a better sprinkler and sold that patent to a company, got it produced, and how things are different for the people who are coming up with new things now. It's a really interesting book, and I'm looking forward to hearing him speak and also to having a chance to talk with him about some of these ideas that he brings forward in that book.
Yeah, I think it really challenged people to start off. But as you were just asking about the experts, I mean, we really have people from across industries, and that's a really big part of the vibe. Is this is a cross industry kind of information sharing, and so we expect people to and people come to there to learn from places that they're immersed in their company, in their industry. And they want to get ideas from other people, what's happening in other industries. And so, for example, we have ConocoPhillips CIO, Mike Pfister, and their head of, as well as Richard Barclay, who's their basically their analytics innovation leader. And they're going to talk about how they're building a platform for analytics so they can get more people involved with using data analytics as a part of their business. So figuring out how to drill oil or gas more effectively, more efficiently, getting that platform out to more people.
Sounds like a great program coming up. I'm looking forward to it. And I know we're all looking forward to hearing more about it. And I guess my question is, are we going to be hearing about the program between now and Interop? Are there things coming up that we should keep an eye out for?
For sure, yeah. We'll be writing about some of the Information Week conference speakers are going to be on. So next week I'm going to have a quick article about our speed networking that we're doing there, just explaining how we're going to do real quick, like a speed dating type of approach to networking, where we make sure that within an hour the IT leaders who attend are going to meet five or six of their peers who have a similar problem, issue, initiative that they're working on. So I'll write something about that next week. I'm going to be talking with one of our panelists who's the mobile development leader at Pinterest, the online interest sharing site, scrapbooking site, some people call it, but a huge growth company on the web. And I'm going to be speaking with him next week, and I'll have an article about that.
Outstanding. Lots to look forward to. And Chris, tell us how we can keep up with you on the Tweety Pipes and other social networks.
Follow me, please, at @murph_CJ. So MURPH_CJ. That's probably the best place to catch up with me.
Well, we will certainly do that, Chris, and we'll look forward to having you back on Information Week Live again in the very near future. I know there's going to be a lot to talk about as we head towards Las Vegas.
Let's do that for sure, Kurt. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Chris Murphy, the editor of Information Week, talking about the Information Week conference, which happens in the same time, at the same place as Interop, but isn't the Interop conference. You know, there's also another conference that happens at the same time. It's called Cloud Connect. There's just a bunch that goes on, and it's all about having really interesting things to talk about with really interesting people who get together in the same place at the same time. Well, when I think about interesting people, of course, my thoughts turn to our next guest, Dave Wagner, who each week, among everything else he does for Information Week, brings us the geek end. Dave, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
Well, and looking at your geek end this week, I'm surprised that you didn't just have a drone drop you into the studio, because you're talking all about having drones bring things to addresses in your geek end.
Yes. Amazon, after originally being turned down by the FAA, was granted yesterday a provisional license that allows them to test package delivery using drones, which has been their dream now since, I think, around 2013, if memory serves.
You know, when I think about this, people have all kinds of views about the subject, and I've seen all kinds of images. But I have to admit that the one that comes to my mind is people from UPS and the U.S. Postal Service positioned with shotguns to bring down these drones because of all the business they stand to lose on the deliveries.
Yes. Well, I don't actually think UPS or the post office have much to fear. If you want a true business viewpoint on this, I did an interview about a month ago that can be found online. I'll get the link on the chat room with a logistics expert who says that the drones actually are doing things the wrong way. Instead of consolidating the packages more, they're actually separating them, and that's going to be inefficient. But what is fascinating about this, from my point of view, is that the FAA has basically found a way to give Amazon permission to test this in a way that in no way possibly allows them to actually test it. The limitations are just far, far too great. So it's really not a useful test for what could possibly be a really interesting way to deliver packages.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about these limitations. What stands between Amazon and a useful test? What kind of things have the FAA put in place to keep this from being a usable test?
Well, for one thing, they're only allowed to go 400 feet high, which is actually not a major deal, I think, except in an urban setting. They must always be in line of sight of the pilot. This is the major limitation I see, because the issue is if I'm going to have to send a person to the place I'm delivering the package to, or within line of sight of the place I'm sending the package to, it doesn't take the driver out of the equation. Basically, as far as I can tell, what they've been given permission to do is to drive the van to my house. Then instead of getting out of the van, the driver will pick up a remote control, fly the drone out of the back of the van, and put the package on my house. That just doesn't actually seem to really save a lot of time or money in my mind. I think by the time I got the drone ready and everything, I could just put the darn package on the porch.
Well, now, let me play devil's advocate with you for just a minute, Dave, because I know that in my amateur radio work, line of sight comes into play. And one of the things that people forget is that line of sight doesn't necessarily mean low power or short distance. For example, I have talked to the astronauts on the International Space Station using a little handheld radio because it was line of sight. And I can bounce radio signals off the moon because it's line of sight. So I'm suggesting that what we might well see, and we haven't heard about yet, are the Amazon blimps. Imagine a blimp with operators, drone operators sitting in. If you're in a blimp at about 1,000 feet, all of a sudden an entire area becomes line of sight. And I wouldn't put it past Amazon to rent time in some of the sports blimps when they're not being used to do just such a thing. Now, what do you think about that?
I think it sounds fun. I think it sounds entertaining. Personally, I'd love to see Amazon get a little cheeky with the FAA. But I think it sounds impractical in Amazon's major markets. I'm thinking, say, San Francisco, where they've tested one-hour delivery for quite some time. The hills, the buildings, they still make that a little more difficult than I would like. That said, I think that there are ways to get around this, and they will do some creative things. And I'm excited to see them get creative. What I just wish is that the FAA would have had a little more guts to let them get creative to begin with.
I think that when you hope that an army of bureaucrats is going to have more guts, then that you're starting to head off in the realm of science fiction there, my friend.
Well, I see that. But at the same time, and this is one of the things I go through in the article, I'm trying to figure out exactly what it is we're afraid of here. Because every day at peak hours, we have 20,000 jet airliners flying over our heads, and we're not afraid of them falling out of the sky and crushing us. Why are we afraid of 30 or 40 pounds of plastic and styrofoam falling on our heads when we're only talking about a few hundred test drones? I'm just trying to figure out what it is we're afraid of and why.
Have you really never seen The Matrix? I'm having trouble with this. Does the word Skynet mean nothing to you?
I don't think that's really what everybody's afraid of yet. I think there's a long way to go before we get there. But yes, I see that. And I think what happens is we create these sort of worst-case scenarios in our head with new technology, and then what we do is we go through and solve the problems one at a time. So, for instance, I was talking to a logistics expert about this, and she reminded me that there was no such thing as air traffic control when the Wright brothers took off at Kitty Hawk, that we invented air traffic control after we had the fear of multiple airplanes in the sky. So the idea of worrying about these sorts of problems with the drones only matters if we let us experiment, let us try it, let us figure things out to begin with so we can solve the problems.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we can put Amazon's drone pilots in the back seat of Google's autonomous cars and solve a whole bunch of problems.
Well, and, you know, I covered earlier this week a story about a company called Aeromobile who are working on self-flying cars. So perhaps Aeromobile can solve either the line of sight problem, or instead of delivering packages by drone, they can deliver them by flying car, autonomous flying car. You just drop the package right out of the back of the autonomous flying car. Right on.
What could possibly go wrong? I love this conversation, Dave, and I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation in the comments around your article this week. You typically have a great discussion around the geek end, and I think this one's going to be another great one.
Yeah, I hope so. I think I tried to have a little fun with this idea, so hopefully people will go there and have a little fun with it too.
Well, Dave, we've come to the end of our time for this week's Geek End, but tell us what we can look forward to from you in the coming week.
Sure. This weekend, hopefully, if it gets done, there'll be the beginning of a new experiment we're doing on the weekend, the weekend top 10 list. This week's top 10 is the 10 reasons you really are going to miss Internet Explorer. I promise you, they exist. And then also next week, I'm going to have a list of the companies from Poachable, from a research done by Poachable, the companies most people wish they could change their job to work for instead, which I think will be a lot of fun for people to talk about.
Well, we will look for both of those and lots more from you in the coming week. Well, speaking of that, Dave, how can we keep up with you on all of the social media channels that you fill with your wit and wisdom?
Sure. Follow me on Twitter at GeekendDave.
We will do that, Dave, and thanks so much for being with us.
And thanks for having me, Kurt.
That was Information Week Executive Editor for Community, Dave Wagner. Always interesting things to say, and this week, especially so when we're talking about drones and dropping things right on your front porch. Now, we've got a lot more coming up in terms of articles on Information Week. As you know, we have dozens of great articles that appear every week on Information Week, and a discussion that happens around each of those articles. And in many ways, that discussion is kind of the point. You know, we are pleased to be able to bring to the Information Week community great information, but we love it when that great information is the starting point for an incredible conversation among peers, colleagues, and knowledgeable people in the realm of IT. So if you're listening to this and you're not used to going in and looking at those articles and taking part in the conversation, let me urge you to do so. It's a great thing to do. I promise you're going to find it's well worth the time it takes to be a participant in the Information Week community. Now, when it comes to radio, we've got a lot more coming up. For the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be at an event called Hot Stage. This is where the network for Interop is put together and debugged before being packed away in crates and shipped to Las Vegas. Each day for the next 2 weeks, over at Interop Radio, we're going to have something called the Hot Stage Diary. Now, this is just going to be a short, probably 15-minute radio show. Comes on each evening at Blog Talk Radio. Follow me at KG4GWA to get the URL for those. Those are also going to be up on iTunes in our podcast. I would love it if you would follow just to see what goes on as one of the world's most complex and largest temporary networks is put together. In addition to that, this coming Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, I'll have Romy Mahajan as my guest on Interop Radio, and we're going to be talking about digital transformation. Romy has been a guest of mine on Interop Radio in the past. He is always a fascinating person to talk to, has tremendous energy and enthusiasm for these IT transformation topics. I think you're going to love hearing what he has to say. Once again, follow me at KG4GWA for the URL, or look for a promotional blog post coming up on Monday. And then, as always, next Friday, we'll have Information Week Live once again. And who knows what kind of great information we'll be bringing you then. Well, for all of us here at Information Week, thank you so much for being part of the community and being here with us. We truly appreciate it and wouldn't do it without you. Join us over in the conversation. We'll see you there. And hey, we'll see you next time.